questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. No matter how vital change may be, those leading it have to be heard if they want others to act to help realize that change. In this episode of the Illumify Game Changer podcast, Jonathan considers how he can break through all of the noise today with messages that others will actually hear.
Card number 39. What will they hear? For a message to move us, we must feel it deep within. It must matter to us right now, at this very moment in time. How can you craft your message so that it resonates and is felt and heard through the noise?
Notice, Brittany, felt and heard.
Well, I'm going to cheat, first of all, by going straight back to Brittany and Jean, and I'm going to take their last two answers because I think that from the previous discussion, because I think they both touched on something. Jean talked about integrity, so the integrity of the message. That's very important. Took us back to that lovely conversation we had together in London about the word integrity and how it suggests wholeness. But interestingly, in our previous discussion before this card, we also talked about the suppleness that's required both in the vision and in the way that we articulate the vision. And I think it's possible to do that, to achieve those things, to find that suppleness, which also is it's similar to the porosity, the need to let air into the
porosity,
vision.
Porosity, great word.
Yeah, because the vision is not afraid and it's not tightening itself and bracing itself to go into the winds of change. It feels confident and so it lets the air in. It's open to other voices. It's open to contradictory evidence, inconvenient data which challenge vital parts of the vision. If it's going to be true to itself, it has to be open to that. But the integrity is important as well, where I like this idea that we're trying to find the best articulation, the best choice of words to be true to the vision, and not because we're trying to sell it to somebody. We're not trying to get past somebody's barriers or their prejudices or attitudes through the clever use of language. So we're not using the trickery of language to get through to them. Neither are we hammering away again and again and again and again the same message until it, we've discussed this previously, Marian. Yes, there is magic in repetition. There's magic in music, in the repetition that you hear in music. It's a beautiful technique and it's necessary. But that too is not the same as banging and banging and banging.
Right, right, right. Pounding on one key of the piano.
Exactly.
Just keep pounding.
That's
it
right.
Versus, yeah.
So it's not that. So I like this idea of integrity. If the communicator, if the visionary is being true to the vision, then I think he should have the confidence to feel that different words, different metaphors can serve the vision. It doesn't have to be just one. So that's integrity. As you said earlier, Marianne, ooh, okay, tell me more. You want tell me more to be kicking in after 3 or 4 seconds, I think. Almost before the person's spoken, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Even just out of being intrigued, maybe haven't heard anything like that before, contrarian to what you always heard.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And as we know, it's not so hard to make a splash in the first seconds of a speech. Yeah. It's not so difficult to be provocative or
make a powerful declaration.
Yeah. The question is, can you then carry that
Yes, yeah. But you also know that in most speeches, those opening minutes are mundane. Often they're hygiene related, you know.
Housekeeping.
Yes, housekeeping related.
Yeah.
And so nice. Thank you for all of that kind of stuff.
Sure.
The mundane.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So opening powerfully is important.
Yes.
You, monsieur, have to use your voice. So
the,
you
the physical.
Yes, you have a voice, you have mastery of language. That is what, you know, you absolutely can establish that connection energetically as an opening. But your ability to ignite your vision is going to require your voice.
Mm.
You do know that, yes.
Mm.
For more than most people, Jonathan.
Sure.
Leadership always emerges through language and through our actions.
Right? I remember you saying that in Toronto. And it was.
Can I take a tangent, Terry?
Come in.
Okay, Jean, I'll put you on the spot, if I may. As you were speaking about integrity, Jonathan, what came up for me is a question, because as you were speaking, Jonathan, you alluded to using different words and metaphors to serve the vision. And you're absolutely right. Again, in your case, your vision has so many facets to it. So it's not about, and again, not about pounding the same note, the same message. Absolutely not. That should never be done, but absolutely not in your case. So then that makes me question, though, there is a vital part of messaging that is related to consistency and congruency. Because as you speak, and Jonathan, you speak about the first instance in which you start to express your vision. So they hear something, X, whatever that may be, they respond to, they interpret it as whatever. And then they hear you again. And if in that again, that next iteration, that next opportunity, they hear something that they perceive not to be consistent with what you said before, maybe in contradiction, the perceived may not be, but it may be perceived to be not congruent, et cetera. So what I'm alluding to here is when we see people in different scenarios on the person front, if we see them at work and they're, you know, behaving professionally, and then we see them at a barbecue drunk out of their minds and flirting with someone else's partner, that those are two different perceptions of that individual that may not be congruent. So, and the same thing, not consistent. I can't rely on them to be the same, to be recognizably the same, not identical, but recognizably the same. The same applies to messaging. So yes, you know, you have the opportunity. It's not about delivering the same exact verbiage, the same exact words every time. Absolutely not. But when you express your vision, it has to be recognizable as the same. And there's an integrity to that.
Mm. And it's interesting because it's written right there and you give this declaration before where you said truth is a way of living.
Mm.
So, and it talks about what you just expressed here, Marianne, where it's not only a role that you play, but it becomes what you are, and it's a way of being that you cannot dissociate yourself
on the personal front. Yeah, but on the messaging front. So again, in terms of what you say each time you evoke your vision, it has to be, and you brought it up, Jean, it has to be true to your vision. There has to be an integrity to the wording, to the various messages, that even if the messages vary, and they should, according to the audience, for example, the individuals, there's still an alignment, a consistency, a congruency to the truth of your vision.
Mm. And what I'm getting from this really strongly is any visible disconnect from your thoughts, words, and actions breeds mistrust. No one's going to trust you if you say one thing and do another, or, oh, he said that last week, but now he's saying this week.
And if it's interpreted as being different and contradictory. So what happens to the human is, and this is all really at this stage about building awareness. And awareness can be likened to what we call a building block process. So what happens, you speak to person A about your vision for the first time, okay? And at the end of that communication, person A has a block, if you can envision a building block, the kind that children play with, of awareness about what it is. The next time they hear you speak about it, there'll be another block and another block and another block. And what you want is these blocks to build certainly a strong foundation for understanding, ultimately action. So each block has to fit in together somehow. And if one block they hear suddenly causes them to question, well, how does that fit into this? Or that doesn't co-align with what I heard earlier, then what happens is they don't know where to put that block in their awareness, their mind, their heart, their awareness of what it is. So what happens then is they're confused, they're uncertain. And when we are in a confused or uncertain state, do you know what happens? We do not act. We don't know how to act. We're immobilized. So if your job as the visionary, Jonathan, is to engage and align a collective to help you ignite the change, and they're now in a state of confusion and uncertainty and will not act, what happens to that? That's what I mean about the importance of congruency and consistency. And there's integrity in that, right, Shah?
Totally. The image is coming to me with children because they observe everything, right? They see everything. So sometimes we'll tell them something and then we turn around and act in a different way or say something else. Yeah. But it's okay. Like, I'm not talking to the child. I'm talking to someone else, but they still see it and hear it. Mm-hmm. And it comes this confusion, so it's...
They should hold us to account for that, shouldn't they?
Totally.
Okay, thank you.
There's something about what you just said and which really rings true, because it's... If we go back to this idea of DNA, it's the idea that you've really got to have the DNA very, very clear.
Yeah.
So that whatever branch you walk on, or whatever example you give, or whether we're in part one or part two or part three of the vision, the DNA is there.
Exactly.
So the audience feels that, Okay, I know this body.
And the DNA is an integral part of your whole vision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, exactly. Yes. And you mentioned storytelling, which is so important here.
It registers in the feeling part of us, right? Not the data part or the fact part, but the feeling part.
And I wonder if it doesn't call for some degree of simplicity in the anecdotal, for example, where the longer we go into a story or an anecdote in a particular time or a particular place, and we're bringing in details, it's not so much the length of the story that might lose somebody, but you're bringing in noise that can distract. People can get drawn to the particular circumstances
of the story,
rather than the actual, than the heart of it.
Yeah, I can see why you might think that actually is the opposite of what happens when you use stories effectively.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always used effectively, sadly,
sure,
right?
No.
So let me first begin by distinguishing between stories and anecdotes, because sometimes the distinction isn't clear. Okay. So the primary thing is that stories have an arc, a dramatic arc to them. A story is taking people on a journey from point A to point B. And what happens is, and as a writer, I don't know if you've heard of Freytag, the Freytag's pyramid is a graphic that I'll simplify by saying, if you envision a straight line on the ground, what happens with story is there's some inciting incident that sparks the story. So you begin at the beginning. And then the story builds, and you reach a point ultimately where there's a climax. Something changes for good or bad. And ultimately, not always, the story then is resolved. And the if you envision a pyramid, you're going up one side and then down the next. So it, however you look at story, there is an arc to it, whatever that arc looks like. And therefore, the key distinction is it's a journey. Anecdotes are illustrations or examples. There's no beginning or end to them. They are things like the first time I saw the power of an anecdote, or one of the first times I was assessing a client's communication, and he was speaking to about 40 people in a room, and he wasn't good. It was the initial assessment I was doing. I'd just begun to work with him, and he was quite ineffective, truly. And by that, I mean people were tuned out until he spoke about, just simply, about being on an airplane with the equivalent of the CEO, just sitting beside her, and he cited just part of their conversation. And I was in the room, and I watched these 40 people lean forward in their seats because they were not privy to being on the plane with the CEO. And that anecdote was something that he was sharing with them. It wasn't changing anything. It wasn't a beginning, middle, and end, but it was a powerful illustration or example of something. Will they remember it? Yes, probably not as well as a story. We imprint stories. We're storytellers, whether we recognize it or not. We are all storytellers. You go home from work and your partner says to you, how was your day? You're telling a story of some nature. That's not necessarily the most effective storytelling, but it is a story. So that's the key distinction on storytelling. And what happens now, if you take your vision, Jonathan, and we've talked a lot about the initial incident where you have the initial experience with them. So if you think about that as the beginning of your story, just as you were on a journey with them to engage, align, and together ignite your change, your vision, the story is a journey. Mm-hmm. So when you use story effectively, you use it to illustrate for them, to let them experience through your story the, for example, and it's done strategically, the ability to go on a journey with you where you resolve something, where there's an impediment. You know, there are so many stories, Greek classic stories, hero's journey, all of those kinds of things. So when you use it very strategically, not only are they on the journey with you again in a different way, but you're giving them concrete experience of having seen, for example, a story, the dramatic arc, seen an obstacle, and surmounting it. And what does that say to them when you're then invoking this big vision?
That it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
And they feel it. It's not for the head. It's for their feeling center.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And yes, Jean, the stories have to have integrity. Actually, I've done a lot of research on storytelling over the years, and one of the things that research has proven is that you should not be telling other people's stories. Well, there's a way to do that, but really they should be your stories. The most authentic stories are your stories, and people will know. To me, it's similar to a speechwriter being given the task of write a thought leadership piece for this politician or this executive. Well, if the executive or politician knows nothing about that subject matter, even giving them the words, it's not going to ring true. So, because it's not their expertise, not their thought leadership. So stories, too, have to have integrity. Children tell them with integrity, don't they?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do children know if a story, well, now, think of how we raise our children with storytelling and some pretty horrific stories, you know. I'm thinking of Hansel and Gretel and being eaten by the wolf and so where does truth and integrity sit with children and stories? I still remember when my son asked us if Santa Claus really existed, and we were in a restaurant and we had to tell him he was probably about 7 or 8, something like that. And we couldn't lie. We don't lie to our sons. So he had hurt someone at school probably. And he asked us, so is there really a Santa Claus? And we had to say no. And he burst into tears because we had shattered this. And then it had me questioning, should we have set up him for this, you know, harsh reality? Well, life can be harsh reality. And then he immediately went to, what about the Easter Bunny? And then we shattered him again. So,
right. Yeah.
So stories.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, what will they hear?
I'm going to stick with your image of the story that builds, but which needs a spark to get it going. And as we said in the previous discussion, there are ways to do this, and it can be, I'd say, a little too easy, a little too cheap sometimes to begin anything, whether it's a speech or a book, frankly, or a conversation with shock, provocation. I mean, that can also be done very well, but it's there are better ways to light that spark. Showing your own emotional charge around the vision from the get-go, I don't think you can build to that. I think the emotion needs to be there. Maybe
true
not,
emotion.
You know, maybe not at the highest pitch,
yeah,
from the get-go, but it needs to be there.
And I would add to that, because yes, that's the starting point. They also have to know you're committed. And that's when we get to unify that, you know, one of the questions when I complete my diagnostic in unify is, do you believe that they are going to take action? Trust that they will do as they promise to do. Sometimes there's no action implied, so that's a hard thing to assess. It doesn't apply because there's no action, there's no offer, there's no promise. But it is about ensuring there's that commitment to follow through. If you seem to be wavering,
yeah,
right,
yes, and I think there's something that couples with that.
Okay.
I think there's something that goes hand in hand with that. I think they need to hear that something is at stake.
Ah, get their attention, kind of.
Yeah,
yeah.
Something's urgent.
So why does this matter? Remember,
right,
you answered that question.
Yeah.
Why does this matter?
Yeah,
and why does it matter now?
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know,
an urgency.
If we don't do this,
yeah,
dot, dot, dot.
Yes.
You know, if we don't take this opportunity now.
Stakes are high.
Yeah.
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 And to see how, back to spark, if they've become inured to what is not ideal, and you talked about connecting through common suffering, mutual suffering to whatever degree and whatever respect. But if that has become normalized, you've got to break them out of that.
That speaks to, again, there is not one tool here, but that what you just say there, Marianne, I think speaks to perhaps to a little bit of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Can we imagine a world where...
What if? Powerful two words.
Mm.
What if? What if we could together?
Mm.
What if you don't have to live like this? What if we could live better together?
Yeah.
People generally, Jonathan, through history, but certainly now in these times that you've alluded to, can't even consider other possibilities because of the burdens they're carrying and the belief systems that are constraining them.
Mm.
So what if?
As the card says, this need to be heard through the noise feels particularly difficult and challenging today. Simply because there is so much noise. And that's not just, I'm not talking about the quality of what's being said or spoken or transmitted or shared online and elsewhere, but just the sheer volumes of data and imagery and sound which are bouncing around.
But you can break through all of that.
Well, you have to. Yeah. If you have to. An image which I see every morning now, or most mornings when I catch the bus, is people on the bus with their pods in or their headphones. There's not a challenge as such there. Again, there's no right or wrong here. I'm just observing. But I think sometimes I've seen that and felt myself isolated. It speaks to some, again, fragmentation, even in our public space. I say this merely because I sense the challenge here of breaking through the noise. Humans have always competed for attention. Yeah, it's one of those forms of competition which are... it just is what it is. There's no way around it. We children compete for attention from their parents.
And noise can be distraction in a really detrimental way.
And I think we build our view of the world. If we're going to resist distraction, if we're going to be perhaps ready for those moments in life that are going to be tough, when the wind, a bit like here in Copenhagen, the wind speed's going to go through the roof, and it's, if you're not careful, you're going to get knocked over. What gives you that supple, like a tree, the supple strength to bend with the wind but not fall over?
Break.
Or break, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then it's that internal strength which...
Absolutely.
For me, that's one of the big parts of the... when we talk about the internal search for truth, what is that? For me, that's a big part of it. And I say that because I'm looking for it still. And I hope to get to it one day. What some people would call poise. A certain equilibrium or equipoise. And I think that... I don't think you can just do that on your own. I think that comes through not just conversation with other people, but sharing difficult experiences. Mm-hmm. When you have those moments of crisis and you don't deal with it on your own, but you do the most difficult thing, which is open up to somebody else, make yourself vulnerable. Yeah. So we've come into a very intimate part of the conversation now, but I think that's where part two of the vision is. It does get very intimate. And back to the cards we've been looking at, that's where the language will have to be carefully crafted. Exactly. So it doesn't scare people by being too intimate. And that it's not self-help. This vision is not about self-help.
No. But it also strikes me now that on your part two, diversity, and you speak of it as from within versus, yes, of course, visible diversity, but from within. So think about, and your declaration that we need each other, that we're to whatever degree on one level incomplete without each other. Mm-hmm. So it just strikes me that that is a perfect description for igniting change, because you can't do it alone. You need other people to complete, in this case, to ignite your vision with you. And you need a diversity of others who can act in individual, complementary, but individual ways that they are capable of contributing. So there's a diversity there as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that can be reconciled with freedom. We are free to follow our own path. We want to, in whatever way.
Well, we also want to be able to contribute, I would say most of us, but also, so that's a generalization, but some sort of contribution. Mm-hmm. In part, maybe ego-driven to contribute to some legacy, make a difference, whatever. There's another higher level of that, not ego-driven. Mm-hmm. So to contribute in some way, right, to the common good, ideally, the better good, the creation of something. But we also, back to integrity, Jean, and alignment, the ideal is to be able to contribute in the way that we are best able to, distinctly, as you're doing invoking the vision, it's distinct to you. And so imagine then if each individual hearing and responding to you is then able to contribute in a way that is not only is the vision meaningful, they get it, but their contribution is in a way, in a form, in a manner, in a time, in a way that fulfills them as well, fulfills a part of them in alignment with their gift, their mastery, their interest, their ability.
Yeah, I think that is so, so important.
Yeah.
What you've just said.
And you allow them to do that.
Yes.
You're creating an opportunity for that.
Yes. Yeah. And it doesn't need to be paraded anywhere, certainly not in the public square. Exactly as you say, Marian, if people are doing something with care and love and skill, their own craft, whatever it is, and they're getting fulfillment from that, in itself has huge value.
Exactly.
Huge value.
Yeah, exactly. And so know that as, again, we move into Unify shortly, when you make an ask of them, a request, know that that can be a win-win.
Mm.
It's not taking from them.
Yeah.
It's together co-creating what doesn't exist yet.
Mm. Yes.
And honoring them and their ability to choose. It's always a choice, but their ability to choose. And if they choose to respond, they have the option now, the opportunity to respond in a way that makes them more whole in some way.
Like it.
Good. So let's go back to the question one. Last time, just for summary, please.
What will they hear? For a message to move us, we must feel it deep within. It must matter to us right now, at this very moment in time. How can you craft your message so that it resonates and is felt and heard through the noise? We've touched on various techniques here.
We have.
Which all, I think, revolve around integrity, emotion, inspiration, which provide energy, both, and that has to be felt and seen in the speaker, but needs to infuse the listener ultimately so that they move towards action. Marianne, you made a very important point about integrity, which is, and I'm still digesting it, because it's not a simple point, it's a complex one, that in every manifestation of the vision, certainly through the language, whether it's through text, through speech, action, image, sound, music, whatever, there has to be congruence. Just as a reader reading a novel needs to feel that the characters are staying in character. There may be a moment of when they suddenly act out of character, but then there needs to be a reason for that. But that's the novel. But where we are here in Amplify and the honing, the fine-tuning of the message, if I've understood you correctly, it's that whatever form the vision takes, whichever formulation, whichever sequence of words, people need to start to feel that they're hearing something that is whole, has integrity, and is for me it's coming back to the same place again and again. It's coming from the same source, back to the DNA. So there's a familiarity which is not coming from the same story again and again. He's going to tell this anecdote about his grandmother again.
Right.
It's a good one, but I'm getting a bit tired.
Do that.
Yeah, it's a good one, but oof. And that's where language needs to be subtle. Supple as well, where we have to, I think metaphor, storytelling, anecdote are always very powerful because they transport the listener into another place and encourage them to imagine.
And imagine what could be.
But sometimes simpler techniques are good as well. The right word at the right moment.
And I'm drawn to using a metaphor here of a telescope. So if you look through a telescope in terms of your communicating your vision, expressing your vision, Jonathan, there are two sides to a telescope. One, if you look through one side, you see a magnitude of the landscape, the larger. And if you invert it, I may be using an old comparison, but you see just a little part of it.
Yes, or the moon becomes just a speck.
Exactly. So if you use that metaphor, when you start to express, you may want to just focus first on a little bit of the landscape for them, and then expand it, ultimately flip it. And then there are other times you have to go back to microscopic because you need them to focus on a particular part of the landscape, as you said, the moon, and see it really clearly.
Yes.
So if there were a telescope on messaging, that telescope would be maybe constantly inverting back and forth, flipping.
Yeah.
But back to what will they hear if you use that metaphor to help determine where are they at right now? What will they hear me say as a starting point based on who they are? And there, we've talked about interests and concerns. So based on knowing them to whatever degree possible, as you said earlier, you'll start perhaps on this with your first degree of separation, those you know most closely, so that you know them better. So that could be a good starting point, because not that you would ever assume, but you can assess without making assumptions where the best entry point and the amount and the topics, the messaging they will hear would be versus an unknown audience or collective yet. So what will they hear? If the thing is about this, it's of paramount importance, because as beautiful and significant as your vision is, if they cannot hear you, if it'll fall on deaf ears. And remember, we've spoken about this is a different level of communication. This communication is with view to engaging others to willingly help you ignite your vision. So there will be no response from them if they cannot hear you.
Yeah. I mean, I see two parts to that response off the cuff. One is that the inevitable relationship here between the vision, which is up there in the sky as a set of values, aspirations, a way of life, bringing that back down to them.
Yes.
So it's not just relatable, not just something that they can get their arms around, but they actually feel it's part of their world, their family.
Yeah. Touches them.
Yes, yes. And then with that go hand in hand, I think, urgency.
Okay.
That we talked about that a little earlier. And this is about storytelling, the sense of the being something at stake here.
But you see, you could, to incite a sense of urgency, you could cite facts. I'm thinking of, and I'm not, this is not a criticism because she's done a laudable job, but Greta Thunberg, the young activist, climate activist, I have heard her speak in her early years. She's not very old yet, but in her early years. And she relied a lot on facts because her brain, her great brain, works on facts. She assembles facts. You can give people facts till the cows come home. But neuroscience has proven that unless we feel something, we will not, we actually cannot make a decision to act. So storytelling invokes feeling. That facts, it's a powerful device for getting people, sparking people into, ultimately into action.
Yeah.
That first spark.
Yeah. Yeah. We act from a place of emotion, first of all, and then our rational mind crafts
It grounds it.
It grounds it.
It grounds it.
And it will reach for the facts to confirm.
Exactly.
The decision that it's already taken.
Yes, so it's without the feeling, the facts just land on empty ground. They do not take root.
Correct.
And actually, the amygdala is the center of the brain, the feeling center of the brain. So it triggers that. Stories trigger that when they're done well.
Yes. Well,
because some people think they're telling stories when all they're doing is really putting the facts into an equation of some sort.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So moving, your job as a visionary is to move people from where they are now to where they could be together onto that new ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
This Illumify Game Changer episode is another reminder of the critical importance of a leader's words. If others don't hear you, they will not act to help realize your vision of change. But how do you ensure they hear you, especially when there's more noise than ever competing for their attention? Jonathan discovers he can cut through that noise with some time-proven tactics, like storytelling. He learns he must ensure that he builds awareness of his vision with integrity and consistency in his messaging, and that facts alone won't suffice. Ultimately, the job of a leader with a big vision of change is to move people from where they're at to where they could be, to incite action. So we land on how to use feeling to get people to act. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change. Thank you.